This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of April 4th, 2021. Happy Easter. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 180. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. The Is It Just Me commentary. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. And the big deal feature. Hear from a former senior RCMP officer about how Vancouver became a magnet for international organized crime on the way to the 2010 Winter Olympics. And hear from Vancouver City Council's first step toward a bid for the 2030 Winter Olympics. But first, is it just me? Is it just me, or did last week feel like a year in North Vancouver's Lynn Valley? On March 27th, a peaceful Saturday afternoon turned into mayhem at the Lynn Valley Village Town Square. A man went on a stabbing rampage at the library, six people injured, one dead. Yannick Bandogo, a boxer from near Montreal, was charged with second-degree murder. On March 30th, a fire at the Lynn Valley Masonic Lodge, and another at the North Vancouver Masonic Temple on Lonsdale, and another in Vancouver at the Park Lodge. Benjamin Orion Carlson Coleman was charged with the Vancouver incident and is the prime suspect in the North Vancouver ones. On April 1st, Bandogo made his first appearance in North Vancouver Provincial Court by video from the North Fraser Pretrial Center. The same day, Timur Agtai also made a video appearance. Agtai is the man charged with making hoax phone calls to the Lynn Valley Care Center the day before the first coronavirus death in Canada last year at the seniors care home. Agtai will go on trial in December of this year. None of these incidents is connected, and we will have to wait for answers about the motives in court, but please give your thoughts and prayers to the people of Lynn Valley. Lynn Valley strong. I'm frustrated to say that because we're in the third wave of the pandemic and we're told to stay close to home, but when it's safe to do so, I highly recommend go visit Lynn Valley, go visit the friendly people of Lynn Valley, help the people heal. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news.
News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In Apple Daily, fresh COVID spike in China sparks panic buying. 29 new coronavirus cases were reported in China's Yunnan province on March 31st, including 23 cases without symptoms. Among them, 12 patients are Myanmar citizens. The city of Ruili, where most of the cases were found, has been placed under lockdown since Tuesday night. Wang Yubo, vice party secretary of the province, said the authorities would conduct mass testing for residents at top speed. In the Taiwan news, China's original Wolf Warrior caught using iPhone. Because of Wu Jing's starring role in the Wolf Warrior propaganda films, he is considered to head the pack and be Wolf Warrior spokesperson by Chinese netizens. However, starting on March 12th, Chinese netizens started to notice that the words iPhone 12 Pro Max began to appear at the end of each of his posts on Weibo, indicating the phone of origin for the messages. By March 21st, Chinese followers could no longer contain themselves, and they started to howl out in protest, such as, "The Wolf Warrior spokesman is using American goods," and, "Why don't you use Huawei?" In ABC News Australia, Australians flagged in Shanghai security files, which shed light on China's surveillance state and monitoring of Uyghurs. The identities of 161 Australian citizens, including a former intelligence chief, government officials, and business leaders, have been exposed in a hacked Shanghai security database, which reveals the inner workings of China's surveillance state. The database includes details of more than 5,000 foreigners who were flagged when they traveled to Shanghai. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, gun found on Michael Renewal was the same one used in downtown Portland killing last August. The crime lab ruled that the casing came from the same 380 handgun that killed Aaron J. Danielson on August 29th. Renouel, 48, a self-described anti-fascist, was wanted in Danielson's killing. Danielson, 38, a supporter of the right-wing group Patriot Prayer, was gunned down after a pro-Trump car caravan wound through the city. Renouel died September 3rd when officers cornered him outside the apartment where he was staying in Lacey, Washington. He was wanted on a warrant for second-degree murder. In the Seattle Times, recall effort against Seattle City Councilmember Kashama Sawant can move forward, state's highest court rules. Recall petitioners now have 180 days to collect more than 10,000 signatures from Sawant's Council District 3. If they collect the signatures, a recall election, an up or down vote on Sawant, would be held, likely in August or November. The recall petition cites conflict of interest as well as leading protesters into City Hall for a nighttime protest and protesting outside Mayor Jenny Durkan's house. Durkan's address is protected because she is a former federal prosecutor. In the North Shore News, letter to the editor. Bystanders who stepped in during Lynn Valley attack were the true heroes. Quote, as much as it was a heck of a call for paramedics, police, and fire, the bystanders were incredibly helpful to myself and the other paramedic crew first on scene, wrote paramedic Ingrid Westcott. They were the true heroes in this scenario. And these headlines in the Breaker.News. Anti-Masonic conspiracy theorist charged with arson at Masonic Hall. Analysis. Vancouver 2030 bid wish goes to city council. Public input not welcome. And peace to Lynn Valley. Love to Lynn Valley. A community warns. Read the stories behind the headlines. Go to thebreaker.news. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.news podcast. Could Vancouver host another Winter Olympics in 2030? Mayor Kennedy Stewart and eight city councillors voted March 31st to take the first step toward bidding for the 2030 Games, telling the Canadian Olympic Committee it is ready to talk about leading a regional bid. 2010 host Vancouver could be closer to another Olympics than it seems. Fewer cities can afford to host mega events, and corruption has run rampant in the bidding process. So the International Olympic Committee is moving away from bidding wars to a negotiation model. In February, Brisbane, Australia became the first city to begin negotiations to possibly host the 2032 Summer Olympics. Boosters say Vancouver 2010 venues would be reused, so there would be no capital cost. But that's not true. There would need to be a new Olympic Village for at least $1 billion. Existing venues would require capital upgrades, renovations, and maybe even expansion. And in 2010, security was the biggest single operational cost at $900 million. You'd need that again for 2030. Three Vancouver City councillors voted in the minority to stop the bid talk entirely. Christine Boyle of One City, Jean Swanson of COPE, and Colleen Hardwick of the NPA. Here is Councillor Jean Swanson.
And then some people are saying, oh, but what about the legacies of the Olympics? I was on the Inner City Inclusivity Committee that was created for the 2010 Olympics by the IOC. Dave Eby was on that committee too, and a bunch of developers were on that committee. And we came up with the unanimous recommendation that we needed 3,200 units of social housing as a legacy of the Olympics. And that's when social housing was actually affordable to low-income people. And what did we get? Hardly any. That legacy is an important legacy that didn't materialize. So yeah, I like ice dancing. But I can watch it in other non-Olympic venues. And the other stuff, the housing, the climate, the putting money into what we really need, that's way more important to me. And I think if we're serious about a new normal, the time is to start now and put a stop to another world spectacle.
Councillor Colleen Hardwick.
This leaves the door open to the Olympics, and it gives the boosters hope. And I think we should nip it in the bud and close the door. So that is the fundamental difference of opinion here. Should we leave it open and allow or encourage, because there's people out there that see these kinds of events that are cataclysmic to the local economy as a good thing. I'm concerned about our overall balance, recovering our balance, and part of that balance is affordability. So anything that we're going to do that is going to interfere with that balance and achieving affordability is not something that I'm going to support fundamentally.
Councillor Sarah Kirby-Young of the NPA is a booster who has a background in the tourism industry, and she's also married to a senior Vancouver police officer.
There is no scope to this at this stage. There's no concept, there's no scope in terms of the number of regions and partners, et cetera. And I think Councillor Domenella referenced it well.
Councillor Kirby-Young, I'll just bring your attention to your time.
Yeah, I think there will be a lot of folks lining up for this, so I think it would be premature to shut this off. And I think it's incumbent on us to say that we're open to considering what the actual work, when we can define what that is.
The 2010 Games were a catalyst for billions of taxpayer dollars spent in rapid transit and caused a tourism and real estate boom. The full costs are unknown because the Auditor General never did a final report, and the Organizing Committee financial reports are hidden at the archives until fall 2025. Mayor Kennedy Stewart says he's on the fence, but behind the scenes, he has held meetings with officials from the University of BC, City of Surrey, and chiefs from three local First Nations who want to build residential towers on their land.
You know, I have not made up my mind about the Olympics because I don't have all the information. What I was asked to do by council was to approach potential partners and talk with them about this, to open a dialogue. That's what I did. And some with host nations and non-host nations. And we have just said that UNDRIP is a very important thing to us. To open a dialogue and then to say, well, we're going to cut it off now, is not really how this should proceed. So for me, council can vote however they want on this. My office will continue the dialogue and come back with recommendations to council. But I would love to have staff support on that. But if council takes that away, fine, I'll just continue through my office. So again, disappointed we're having this type of conversation today. That is not informed and potentially has massive impacts, and also means that perhaps other senior governments might just take this our input away. So again, vote how you like, but I'll continue the work.
That was Vancouver Mayor Kennedy Stewart. The Canadian Olympic Committee is busy preparing for this summer's Tokyo Summer Olympics and next February's Beijing Winter Olympics, but it could go full speed ahead with a bid starting next spring. The Breaker.News will follow developments in Vancouver's 2030 Winter Olympics bid ambitions. As Vancouver prepared to welcome the world with the 2010 Winter Olympics, some of the world's organized crime and narco-terrorist groups were making themselves welcome in British Columbia. At the same time, the BC Liberal government cut back policing of casinos and illegal gambling. On March 29th, the Cullen Commission Public Inquiry on Money Laundering in British Columbia heard how Chinese triads, Islamist militants, and associates of Mexican drug lord El Chapo Guzman were working through Vancouver, whose port is one of the least policed on the Pacific coast. Calvin Christie was a 33-year veteran of the RCMP. His specialties included investigating money laundering and transnational organized crime networks. Christie testified under examination from commission lawyer Stephen Davis.
As it evolved in the late 2000s, continuing into the 2010, 11, 12, and definitely confirmed in that time where it was first saw through intelligence, human source reporting, and then through operations and investigations. Essentially, the convergence, what I would describe as three main networks: the cartel network, Mexican, with some inclusion of Colombian cartels, the Middle Eastern networks. In particularly networks associated to Iran, inclusive of the money service businesses, and then the inclusion of the triads from China and the related networks, inclusive of the Vietnamese crime groups and others in the Vancouver. And basically, I saw those crime groups evolving and, more importantly, collaborating as a collective. And then we also saw periodically the convergence with the Chinese networks. Say, for example, dropped calls. And then when we looked at dropped calls on digital number recorders, we would see that some of the dropped calls came from somebody that was formerly known to be affiliated closely with a Hezbollah-related network, i.e. an Iranian proxy network. We would see some triad networks receiving security from Iranian networks. So we saw the convergence. We weren't too sure if this was by coincidence. So we worked with our international partners, and obviously extremely sensitive in terms of some of the work that we did with our international partners just to verify this. But we worked with them to research if this was coincidental engagement or if there was something more significant to it. And our partners involved in the intelligence work globally confirmed with us repeatedly that there appeared to be a convergence of these three networks dominating the Vancouver area, becoming a very significant threat.
Was there anything else about Vancouver that was unique and different from those other kind of major global cities?
Yes, I think a lot of people don't realize that the port of Vancouver is the fourth largest port in North America in terms of volume. The other ports are Long Beach, LA, and New York. So it made Vancouver a significant place in terms of its capacity for a redistribution hub. I know in some previous reporting, and I think one of the former exhibits entered talked about in the Chapo Guzman case, about how Canadians liked, I think they referred the term high test, but higher quality cocaine. And there was a presumption by, I think, the author of the book and within the exhibit that it was because of Canadian consumers. I'd suggest that it could also be potentially because of the interest to bring high quality cocaine here, because they were looking at redistributing it, inclusive of redistributing it through the port of Vancouver.
Cullen Commission hearings continue until mid-May. A final report is expected by the end of 2021. You can watch the webcasts at cullencommission.ca. But with 6 weeks left, time is running out. The public inquiry under Justice Austin Cullen has not announced if it will call former Premiers Gordon Campbell or Christy Clark, former gambling ministers Rich Coleman or Mike DeYoung, BC Liberal campaign mastermind and casino lobbyist Patrick Kinsella, or even former Vancouver Mayor Gregor Robertson. The Breaker.News will continue to follow the Cullen Commission.
You by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to the people at North Shore Emergency Management, who set up the North Shore Wellness and Resilience Center at the Karen Magnuson Rec Center in Lynn Valley. If you need to speak to someone about the March 27th Lynn Valley Village tragedy, go to nsem.ca for information. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca.
So I'm very happy that I'm going to get my Moderna shot today. And I wanted to tell everybody, I think you should get out there and do it too. I even changed one of my songs to fit the occasion. It goes, vaccine, 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 vaccine. I'm begging of you, please don't hesitate. Vaccine, 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 vaccine. Because once you're dead, then that's a bit too late. I know I'm trying to be funny now, but I'm dead serious about the vaccine. I think we all want to get back to normal, whatever that is, and that would be a great shot in the arm.
Those are the sounds of country music legend and actress Dolly Parton on Twitter. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of April 4th, 2021. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on April 4th in 1967, civil rights leader Martin Luther King Jr.'s Beyond Vietnam, A Time to Break Silence speech in New York City? But a year later, in Memphis, he was murdered by an assassin. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to Bob at TheBreaker.News. Bookmark TheBreaker.News. You can also find us at TheBreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit TheBreaker.News on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. Happy Easter. Until next week.